attention, please.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast. Tune into The Drive 3 until 6 p.m. weekdays on the Sports Hub.
I love it. It's brilliant.
Tonight is about Zion Williamson and the strength of North Carolina's two blue bloods, with the Tar Heels and Blue Devils potentially making up half of the draft's top 10 picks in Brooklyn. Our industry is usually about pushing the conversation forward rather than looking backwards. And even as college basketball, the chapter of Zion Williamson playing at Duke ended months ago, I wanted to take a few moments to examine the last year we've experienced with him before we officially turn the page to his NBA chapter later tonight. Zion's year at Duke will never be forgotten here. He did the impossible. He made America love Duke. Think about that for a second. I remember we first acknowledged this when we were sitting courtside, Operation Basketball in Charlotte. C.L. Brown was with us from The Athletic. I presented it as a question. Is it possible for the hype surrounding this player, if he's able to meet it, to make Duke likable? And we dismissed it, said, come on now. The nation's not going to fully take on Duke. And I filed it away, started thinking about it a little more during the season. And I remember it was Syracuse playing Duke in the same building months later inside the Spectrum Center. Brian Ives, who is a researcher for College Game Day, football and basketball, tapped me on the shoulder and said, I've been to so many of these ACC tournaments, especially in the state of North Carolina. This is the first time I can ever remember Duke being cheered when they're introduced, Duke being rooted for, Duke not being the villain as they were facing Syracuse. And as I looked around the crowd that day, it was a little surreal to take that in. That's all because of Zion Williamson. He made college basketball mainstream outside of March. See, we talk about college basketball 12 months out of the year. There aren't many places you could do that. You could do that in Louisville. You could do it in Lexington. You could do it around here in the state of North Carolina. There's your list. Nowhere else will sports radio stations, local sports stations, talk about college basketball around the calendar. But around the country, college basketball was a regular talking point, and it was because of Zion. We've seen great stars come through here. We've seen great one-and-dones. Kyrie Irving, Harrison Barnes, even though he was here for 2 years. Jabari Parker, Jahlil Okafor, you name it. Dennis Smith Jr. at NC State. None of those players was bringing Drake around. Drake wasn't wearing any of their high school jerseys at concerts. Jay-Z wasn't going to Dennis Smith Jr.'s games, even though J. Cole was, but that's for a different reason, him being from Fayetteville. I don't recall LeBron James going to see Harrison Barnes play or Kobe White play. I don't recall a president of the United States making time out of his schedule to watch any of the previous one and dones, watch Marvin Williams, or to watch, you fill in the blank, Austin Rivers. They did with Zion. And that game probably will be the one that sticks out to me the most. Just when it all hit the epicenter, the hype reached the highest point where you felt like the roof was going to explode. You felt like the roof was going to explode, but instead of the roof, it was Zion's shoe when Duke faced North Carolina. President Obama pointing and saying, his shoe broke. Sitting 10, 15 feet away from Spike Lee and Todd Gurley and Ken Griffey Jr. and Devin Funchess and Hayden Panettiere and Greg Olsen and Maverick Carter. Like, it's easy for us to move on from this and just go on to the next thing because that school works. But these last 12 months have been insane. forgot the U.S. national team was playing. Have they scored already?
We are live. United States versus Sweden live on Fox right now. Women's World Cup action. And the United States, the women, at it again. They've already scored a goal. Lindsey Horan with a goal. 3 minutes into the contest here. 1-0 over Sweden. Back to you, Josh.
This is going to be obnoxious. Last week we did this with Thailand. And I got interrupted 13 times during the show. Sweden's a pretty good team, so 3 minutes in, the Americans are leading here. Surprising stuff, but good for the U.S. soccer team. So we will interrupt whatever we're doing to update you on U.S. women's national team goals. Your thoughts are welcome on Twitter at SportsHubTriad. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. But think about what these last 12 months have been with Zion. It was nonstop content from August through now. It started in Canada. A couple of exhibitions. Zion, with a full head of steam, jumped from the foul line and dunked it one-handed. And that was the first time we all truly marveled at what this guy was capable of doing. Then in the preseason, it was a vertical jump that broke the Duke record. And then his listing was released. We marveled at that. 6'7", 285 pounds, 18 years old. The Kentucky game. The hype machine began. The dunks. I remember I was at the Indiana game. He stole one from half court, and it almost resembled the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan when everything slowed down. As Tom Hanks was looking around the beach, everything was quiet in that moment. When Zion stole the ball, there was a hush in what was a zoo the rest of that game. And then Zion dunked the basketball, and everything just rushed back forward. The Clemson game, steals one, reverses, dunks with the left hand. I mentioned the shoe game. He returns after the shoe game. Gone a month. 13 for 13 shooting, which is an ACC tournament record of shots made without a miss. He beats North Carolina with that second jump and puts it back, 74-73. Wins the ACC title. The UCF drive on Taco Fall. So, I know we hear a lot about Zion Williamson. It's too much coverage and all of these things. This guy is the biggest star our sport, our state, has seen in probably the last 25 years. Probably since Shaq. Zion Williamson. We haven't seen a talent like this in college basketball. He's in our state. He's home to the Carolinas. I never really understood the criticism of us talking too much about the guy. At any rate, 336-777-1600. Let's go to Chad in Winston-Salem. Chad, you're on the Sports Hub. What do you got for me?
How's it going?
Going good. Hey, what's up?
I just wanted to let you know, man, we're in Winston-Salem. You know, we got Jalen Hurd that's from Lake Forest. We got some other players, man. We don't have to talk about Zion every day, every minute. Zion's great. But
how about I do you a favor then, Chad? How about I do you a favor to hold you up really quickly? I got Danny Manning on today's show going to be with us at 5:30. How's that sound? We'll talk Wake basketball and Jalen Hurd with him. How's that?
That's awesome. But another couple of things. Duke didn't win the ACC regular season this year. They tied North Carolina with it. Kobe White, the guy you've been talking crap about all week, was just worked out for the Knicks today, who has the third pick. So I'm just saying there's other people to talk about besides Zion and to talk bad about UNC guys.
Thank you so much, Chad, for the phone call. Talk bad about North Carolina guys. I said Kobe White was a lottery pick. Yeah, he worked out according to Woj with the Knicks, but in that same report he said RJ Barrett, they're locked in to take him. We hope to hear more about the North Carolina guys. It's an interesting perception people have. The biggest star our state has seen. Also, I made sure to point out that he won the ACC tournament title, and Duke did not tie for the regular season. Virginia tied with North Carolina. So I get the beef. North Carolina fans, they're going to North Carolina fan. Wake Forest, as we mentioned, we're going to talk with Danny Manning a little bit later on in today's program. Joe Weil going to chat with us too. Look forward to catching up with him. Voice of the Winston-Salem Dash. Zion stepped to the podium yesterday, was meeting with reporters, and he put a very damning rumor to rest about him. A damning rumor that's been circling the mill the last few days. He put it to rest.
God, I think the food place was called Commanders.
Yeah,
I've been seeing some of people saying I got like chicken tenders. No, that was my 5-year-old brother that did that. I got fried shrimp with some mashed potatoes.
See, it's never okay to just get chicken tenders as an adult. It just isn't. If you're in New Orleans, you're going to a restaurant, I assume to be a nice restaurant, that is a rumor you need to put away. Zion, he's been in the news cycle. Everyone's talking about him. There are people who are questioning his game. People are saying critical things. That's all good and well. But the moment you accuse him of going to New Orleans, one of the best places to get food in this country, in the world, and eat chicken tenders, that's a line too far. Good for Zion to dismiss that. Yes, Dad.
I hope you didn't think that the segment was going to be able to end without me pushing back slightly on this whole notion that now Duke is the nation's darlings and everyone's cheering for them because they had Zion Williamson this year.
This past year, they were.
No, what has happened? If you hated Duke before Zion arrived on campus, you still hated him when they were there, and you hated him after he left. None of that changed. What's happened is that some of the reasons why people used to hate Duke have changed because the players don't stay long enough to develop the hatred. Grayson Allen's a perfect example of this. He was there for 4 years. By the time he left, he had reached Christian Laettner, J.J. Redick status in terms of hate.
Sure.
These kids are here 8 months. So, like, we people that aren't Duke fans don't attach them to Duke. They're not cheering for Duke, the school. They're cheering for R.J. Barrett, the player. Zion Williamson, the player. They like the talent that they're seeing.
Yes, but that didn't happen before. Nobody rooted for Duke players before. I don't remember that. Who? Name them.
Very first name comes to mind is Grant Hill.
People rooted for Grant Hill?
Yeah.
Everybody hated Grant Hill.
No, they didn't. He was the one Duke player that people did not hate. And actually, he put Duke on his back in 94, took him all the way to the title game in Charlotte. So, I mean, there's been instances of players from Duke that people liked.
The most popular team in the country, or polarizing, was the Fab Five at that time. You had players who were calling Grant Hill and Uncle Tom.
I said 94, his senior year. By that time, the Fab Five was done. That was the first 2 years.
He was hated before 94.
He was never hated. Grant Hill was never really hated by Duke haters.
The Michigan Fab Five spoke out saying how much they hated Grant Hill.
I'm talking about fans, not players that played against Grant Hill.
I'm telling you, nobody dislikes Zion Williamson. I haven't heard anybody go out there and say, you know what? Bleep Zion.
Yeah, nobody.
Not one person.
Nobody hates Zion Williamson, and that wasn't my point. People are hating the coverage of Zion Williamson.
But you know,
it's gotten too much.
Here's the thing. It attracts tweets. I'm getting tweets right now. We get phone calls. Here's the thing. Here's how sports talk radio works. I'm going to break it down for you. The same way it works for anybody else. In music, the biggest critique is they play too much of the same song so much. You know why? Because that works. If you go on national sports radio, what are they talking about? The NFL and LeBron. There you have it.
That's
college basketball, in this market, in this state, if you're not talking about Zion Williamson today, you're not doing it right. So any other critique to the contrary doesn't quite make sense to me. Up next, why the Tampa Bay Rays should just pass the sticks. This is The Drive.
Ready whenever you are.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Now, the Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920.
Fayetteville, top of the sixth inning, but Scout shot went way over that wall in right field. A solo blast to make it a 2-1 ball game. Saying with the bat to the pitcher, J.P. France. Ouchtown, population, you bro.
That was the winning call yesterday in a loaded volume 3 of Joe Weil's movie lines that he's done in the first half of the season. The second half begins tonight. The Lynchburg Hillcats are in town. If weather holds up, I plan to be at this Dash game later on tonight. Joe joins us live, and you can listen to Joe starting at 7 o'clock for that game. Continue to send us in movie lines, as many of you are doing right here at Sports Hub Triad. But Joe, before we get to that, I want to get your thoughts on two different stories in baseball today. One regarding the club that the Dash is associated with, the White Sox announced earlier in the week that they're going to be moving the nets all the way down to the foul pole. What's your reaction to the White Sox taking this, what seems to be a very progressive step?
I think it's great, and it's something that you will see the rest of the teams do. This is how the game has evolved over time, because the nets have already been extended in recent memory, and because of the most recent thing to happen, the players wanted this to happen. I think the fans over time are going to realize that this really won't do much in terms of affecting watching the game, because I've never heard any fans at our ballpark complain about there being a net in front of first base. I don't really think it affects everything too much. So this is the right move, and it's pretty cool that the White Sox, again, as you just said there at the top, Josh, that this is a team that we're affiliated with, is really being the pioneer and being the first to do this.
The Tampa Bay Rays received permission from Major League Baseball to explore a plan that would have them play early season home games in Tampa and the remainder of the year in Montreal. This is a good baseball team, but it's in an old stadium. They can't get a new one. Fans aren't showing up. Could the days of the Tampa Rays be numbered?
I think they are already numbered in some ways, because it's apparent to everybody that this doesn't work in Tampa Bay. They've tried. They've had some good teams. Really, since 2008, they've been a solid baseball team, and yet the fans just don't show out. And you have a city in Montreal that actually back in the day was one of the best places to watch a game of baseball. I didn't know this until I read Jonah Carey's book. It's called Up, Up, and Away, and it's about the history of the Montreal Expos. But in the 1980s, they were amongst the most popular teams in terms of actual fan attendance. And they had some really memorable players at the time, like Andre Dawson and Tim Raines and, you know, some others as well. But they drew. And what happened was, it was a city that just continued to get essentially kicked in the groin when it came to their team and the fact that they had good seasons, they didn't make the playoffs. Then you had the 94 year where they were probably the favorite to win the World Series, and then that's when they had baseball on its strike. And then because of that, they lost a lot of money. They couldn't keep their players. And then it led to what it ultimately became, and that's no longer any baseball in Montreal. I think that it almost seems inevitable in some ways that baseball will return there. And people need to remember that, again, there was a viable – it was a viable place back in the day. In my memory of it, being a kid that grew up in the 90s first and then early 2000s, it seemed like it was a place nobody went to, but that's not the true history of it. The true history was in the 80s, it really was one of the best places to watch a baseball game, and I think people in Montreal still have fond memories of the team, and I know they want that team back too.
Follow Joe on Twitter, at @Joe_Weil. Let's get to the final of Joe's volumes of movie lines in the first half of the year. It's the fourth and final one. Dez, go ahead and hit it.
Davis, one of the smaller guys on this Pelicans team, stands in at 5'10", 175. But certain guys can make it work in the baseball world by being a certain height and a certain weight. For me personally, I'm just one stomach flu away from my goal weight. 3-2. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Mitchell goes down. One out. You know what they say. Fool me once. Strike one. But fool me twice. Strike three. Taken for a strike on the inside corner. The song Temperature by Sean Paul playing in the background. And you know, babes are like a bad song. Once you get them stuck in your head, you can't get them out again. As Joe Erol went out to talk to Kyle Nickel, and Nickel's a much smaller guy than Erol. You wonder how that conversation went. Wonder if the bases umpire and Kyle Nickel maybe had a little bit of fun with it, saying, I thought you'd be a little bigger. And it goes toward a woman eating a hot dog right now down that first base side. So if an usher were to come up to her and say, hey, lady, you looking for some biscuits? She'd likely retort back, no, I'm fine. Rolling at the same time. It's one of those breaking point decisions that can determine a ball game. You take the blue pill, the story ends, you wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. The 0-1. Bounce to the right side and throw for a base hit. Henry stops at second. The throw from the right fielder Frost comes in to the shortstop in Remillard. So now the Mudcats have two on with nobody out. Or you can take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Excellent there. It is stick-to-itness from Joe Weil to have a base hit to right field and still get the rest of that matrix line in there, which is the longest call that we've given him in the first half of the year. Which one of those are you most proud of, Joe?
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. Dez was on the board this day, and I was so thankful that I think it was in the ninth inning, there was a ball hit toward a woman with the hot dog. And I thought that was my lone shot to get that one in. So I had some fun looking for some biscuits. And it's funny because I know that's on a movie line. That's from Jake DeLome in that commercial that we were talking about.
Yeah, Bojangles.
But that's the one I love.
All right, we'll get a poll up shortly, probably in the next hour or so when we narrow it all down to four. But let's get to the second half. It starts tonight at 7 o'clock. We have movie lines for you that the audience is sending in. Dez, which of these two do you like more from the audience? Since today is draft day, someone's given me a quote from that awful Kevin Costner movie where he's running the Browns and they're good, a fantasy movie, where he says, we're living in a different world than it was 30 seconds ago. We're living in a different world than it was 30 seconds ago is one. The other, Clint Eastwood line, go ahead, make my day.
I kind of like the living in a different world line.
All right.
More.
It is draft day.
Yeah.
So that's the one we're going to go with from the audience. We're living in a different world than it was 30 seconds ago. Think you can handle that, Joe?
I think I can. I like that one.
All right. I've got one for my, since it is NBA draft day, I started thinking about basketball movies. In my favorite basketball movies, He Got Game. And this line is pretty good. I hate my name. What kind of name is Jesus anyway?
How is he supposed to put that in a baseball game?
I'm giving him the canvas. The next line is probably the best part. I hate my name. What kind of name is Jesus anyway? It's biblical. Yeah, no bleep.
He's got to say all of that?
No. Just, I hate my name. What kind of name is Jesus anyway? Okay. That's the line that Joe's going to find a way to work in tonight.
Doesn't sound very confident with the breathing there.
No, he can figure it out. I'm confident in Joe. We've given him more difficult things than that. I mean, he worked. If I were a tumor, my name would be Marla.
He did.
Right?
I had just literally told him, don't worry about the biscuit line because we were in the ninth inning and he found a way to get it in there smoothly. So,
Dez, give me a line.
Actually, this is going to be coming from intern Nick today. Hit it.
Intern Nick, what do you got?
I'm actually going to do Yo Adrian from Rocky.
Yo Adrian. Okay. Right. Does he have to say it like Rocky or no?
Yo Adrian.
That'd be.
Wow!
Hey,
that was Wait, Joe good. Actually like has that. Some of it in his arsenal. What was that one more time, Joe?
Yo Adrian.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to
All
do
right.
it that way.
All right. I think we're going to kick off the second half the right way. Joe, have a good call tonight.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Joe Weil on Twitter at @Joe_Weil. And we'll decide what belongs on this Twitter poll for the fourth and final installment of Joe's first half calls a little bit later on. But be sure to vote on that on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. We're doing a Disney Pixar movie draft next on The Drive.
Come on! This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
We're now being joined by Wake Forest head basketball coach Danny Manning, who once upon a time, of course, was the number one pick in the 1988 NBA draft. So a lot to talk to you about, Danny, with the NBA draft coming up this evening. But first, let's go back to 1988. What do you remember about draft night most? What memory sticks with you still today?
What memory sticks with me most today? The humbling, overwhelming feeling of being selected to play in the league that I had dreams of wanting to be a part of. And, you know, all of it coming to that point of on draft night of hearing your name called, walking up on the stage, shaking the commissioner's hand. And then from there, it just becomes a whirlwind of interviews and constant conversation from different people wishing you well, congratulating you. So it's a lot to take in, but it's something that you do so very humbly and thankfully as well.
How many teams have asked you about Jalen Horde over the last few months, Danny?
We've got our fair share of calls that have their interest in Jalen. And, you know, that's always a good thing when you get those phone calls. One, because that means you're recruiting quality people that can play at that next level. So, you know, we're looking forward to hearing his name get called out and, you know, watching him continue to grow and develop and see probably his best basketball in the years ahead.
Take me behind the scenes, though. When you have these conversations with teams, what do you tell them about Jalen Horde?
Well, you know what? It's a lot different now than it's been in the past because, you know, most of these guys come to quite a few of your practices. They watch all of your games. The games they don't watch in person, they watch on film. So there's not too many secrets in that regard because those guys are great or people are great evaluators. It's more so just trying to figure out the personality. What type of young man is he? Is he respectful? Does he go to class? Does he? What type of student is he? Those are all the things that they really want to know. It's because basketball-wise, with their analytics department, they got it all figured out in that aspect. So, you know, for us, it's really easy. Jalen's a wonderful young man, very respectful, works really hard. And, you know, he was a pleasure to be around, and we enjoyed having him.
How did the conversation go, you and Jalen, trying to figure out what was best for him and whether he should have gone pro?
Well, you know, Jalen, his goal ultimately was to be an NBA player. And, you know, he felt like this was the time for him to go all in on that aspiration and dream. And that's what he wanted to do. And, you know, he finished up academically, did everything he needed to do, and then he put all of his energy and directed it toward getting prepared for this moment or this opportunity.
Wakehead basketball coach Danny Manning with us here on the Sports Hub. When's the first time the name Zion Williamson appeared on your radar?
It was a few years ago. You know, you hear about a talented high school player, and as a college coach, you know, you want to look into it to a certain extent and, you know, watch some video and then didn't really watch him play, didn't really, you know, recruit him coming out of high school, but, you know, had chances to see flashes of him playing at different events and thought he was a tremendous talent.
You said that he reminded you of Rodney Rogers. When you finally had a chance to watch him in person, what's the single thing that stands out about him most?
His basketball IQ.
Really?
He's a tremendous basketball player with a great feel and understanding of the game. His passes were on time, on target. The way he sees the game was very, very impressive to me. Now, I know everybody's going to think about all the other spectacular plays that he makes, but I was really impressed with his basketball IQ and how savvy he was on the court.
As somebody who actually experienced being the number one pick in the draft, I'm interested in how expectation meets reality. You're talking about something you always wanted to do as a basketball player. What do you think Zion is feeling at this present moment?
You know what? There's probably a little bit of sense of knowledge to a certain extent because I think it's just general information out there that the Pelicans are going to select him.
So, you know, he's I'd got say so.
He's got just a little bit more calmness in his mindset than a lot of the other players out there because nobody else really, really knows to that extent what's going to happen. And you know what? Taking a step further, even if you get drafted by a team, there's a possibility you could get traded. Especially when free agency rolls around and things of that nature. So, but I think for him, I think he's probably feeling pretty comfortable in knowing that he's going to get the opportunity to hear his name selected. He's going to get an opportunity to play in the league that he's always wanted to play in. And the type of person and player he is, he's wherever he goes, he's going to make them better. That's what you want.
We're talking to Danny Manning, Wakehead basketball coach. I'd be remiss not to mention since Rodney Rogers' name came up, that it is his birthday. So a happy birthday to Rodney Rogers as well. The last time we spoke, Danny, we were talking about Coby White, and you said his physical build reminded you that of Devin Booker, the former Kentucky star who now plays with the Phoenix Suns, and it checks out. He's 6'5", has great speed. Some of the concerns that scouts have had regard his wingspan and maybe some of his defensive concerns, but that's not a rare thing you see with younger players. What position do you see Coby White playing at the next level?
To me, I think he's going to end up being a point guard. I think his size, his skill set, I think, you know, playing that position at North Carolina this year really helped him out and gave him that platform to show people that he could play it. And I just think as when you move to that professional level, the size, the athleticism of the players that you're playing up against, I think his measurables fit into that category, along with him being able to score the basketball. I think he's a very underrated scorer in terms of the different ways that he can score. We know he can shoot it from three, we can get to the rim, but, you know, I like his pull-up game as well. And I thought he did a really good job of picking his moments, when to force the issue offensively, going to get a bucket, and then setting up his teammates. So I look at him as someone that's kind of that new age point guard. He's not a true point guard, but he can play the point guard spot and he can defend it.
Cam Johnson is being seen as somebody who might be the purest three-point shooter in this draft. He's 23 years old, which means he's going to drop a little bit when most of the lottery, of course, consists of 18 and 19-year-olds. How do you think Cam Johnson's game is going to translate to the pros?
I think Cam Johnson is going to be really, really efficient and successful. I think his skill set of being able to shoot the basketball, his length, his maturity. You know, people forget Malcolm Brogdon was in school 5 years and was rookie of the year. That's the story that needs to be told. You know, nobody talks about that story, but, you know, now he's helping a team be very successful with the Milwaukee Bucks. So Cam Johnson steps into that realm in terms of the experience level and the skill set that he has. You know, he's going to bring value.
Since you mentioned Malcolm Brogdon, I'm interested in what you're making of what Tony Bennett's doing in your league right now and how he prepares guys for the pros. Malcolm Brogdon was a little bit overlooked when he went into the NBA, but then you see guys like Joe Harris who go into the league and have success, Justin Anderson too, and of course DeAndre Hunter is expected to be taken in the lottery. What are some things you see from these players, or what Tony Bennett coaches over there, the way they play, that prepares guys for the pros so well?
Well, I think Tony's a tremendous coach, first and foremost, and I think his experience as a player, collegiately and in the NBA, has definitely played a part in how he develops his players. But, you know, his guys leave Virginia, and they're ready for that next level, offensively and defensively. And, you know, this year he's got a boatload of dudes that will have that opportunity too after winning the national championship. But, you know, Tony's a tremendous coach and a great young man. A
couple housekeeping notes before you let you go, Danny. John Curry's been in his post with Wake Athletics for a few months now. He's been in leadership for a little over a month and a half. What have your initial dealings with him been like, your initial conversation?
They've been very well. You know, I think, you know, for me, you look back and always will have a great deal of gratitude for Ron Wellman for hiring me. But, you know, leadership changes happen in our profession on a regular basis a lot of times. And I'm looking forward to working with John and following his leadership for what he has for our athletic department. And he's been a lot of fun to be around, and looking forward to working with him and for him.
Tell us what these new facilities look like, what you expect them to be when you get in there with the basketball program.
Well, we feel like it'll be one of the best basketball development centers in the country, especially where it's located on campus. The amenities that we're going to have, we're excited. We'll have a new practice gym. We'll have one of the biggest basketball-only weight rooms in the country. Everything will be state-of-the-art, and you know, it's just going to give us a chance to really show people what we're all about in terms of development of young men, not only on the court but off the court.
We've covered a lot, Danny. Danny Manning, Wake Forest head basketball coach. We've gotten into some of these players, yours, ones that you coached and ones you've coached against, and what's going on with Wake Athletics. But what I'm most interested to know is you have camps going on, I understand, this week. So we appreciate you squeezing us in. Does Danny Manning ever step back in there and show some of that competitive fire we saw decades ago, even as you're a couple decades removed from playing now?
No, those days are over with. I'm quite happy with how things have worked out for me. About 6 weeks ago, almost 7 weeks ago, I had my right knee replaced. So I'm working on a knee replacement right now. So I enjoyed my time on the court. I'll go out there and shoot a couple spot J's, but I got no visions or visions of grandeur in terms of stepping back out there and trying to do anything really crazy, because I don't want to go under the knife again.
Listen to what it is I'm telling you, though. If you caught it in the paint, Danny, I know a move that will get everybody. There's no way it would be stopped from Danny Manning. Just throw that elbow. Throw that elbow. Nobody's going to call a foul on Danny Manning. No one's calling it.
Yeah, you're right. They're not calling too many fouls in the post now. There's a lot of displacement going on, but that's a different conversation.
we'll save that for next time. Danny, thanks for doing this.
All right. Take care.
You got it. That's Danny Manning, Wake Forest head basketball coach, kind enough to spend some time with us. I'm being honest. If Danny caught the ball in the paint and he threw that elbow out there, who's calling it? Who's calling a foul on Danny Manning there? It's like when people talk about if MJ could go in there and play today. If MJ could go into paint, how many points would Danny Manning score? On Twitter at Sports Hub Triad, if you threw him in an NBA game and you just started throwing that elbow, who's... I think he's getting 10 points, 12. He's 53 years old. He turned 53 in May. I'm telling you, you put Danny Manning in a game today. I know he's been under the knife, as he pointed out. I'm not saying he wants to play. Just throw that elbow. He's going to get buckets. That's what's going to happen. We take it to the house next on The Drive.